From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Man Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Man Cometh!
We are back with another edition of The Dice Man Cometh. Trent and Mark here with a show chock full of tips for gamers, tips in the realm of fashion, diet, and lately lower intestinal health. Because, you know, we spend a lot of time on our rears, sitting around tables playing games, rolling dice. It's only fair that we should look after the business end of things.
We absolutely should, that's for sure. Keep ourselves healthy. Trent, are you healthy?
No.
Oh, that's no good.
I'm cranky and annoyed and don't even get me started.
It seems like a lot of people are crook lately, but I'll tell you what, just to cheer everyone up,
oh,
we are going to have a show full of stuff to keep you moving through. It's the Metamucil of game shows. We're going to talk about what we've been playing, of course. We have an interview with Charles Bishop, one of the organisers. Trent's just picking himself up off the floor. One of the organisers of the Australian Toy and Games Expo. Do they have a...
What?
I was going to say an anachronism. And a...
Acronym.
An acronym, that's the word.
No.
ATAG. OzTag.
Thank you.
No, I don't know. We've got all the news that's fit to be half-assed, and we're going to talk about what we'd like to see in a Game of Thrones games, because, of course, we've all got Game of Thrones withdrawals. But now, the moment you've all been waiting for...
Oh, I tell you what, I'm in the mood for this tonight. The new Mastodon album is out. It's called Once More Around the Sun, and track two of it sounds like this. The sound of the new Mastodon album, that track's called... called something, The Motherlode, right, on the Dice Men Cometh here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with Trent and Mark, and like a dose of Metamucil, that one has cleared the way for the rest of the show.
Cleaned you out, has it?
Thank you, thank
you.
No
worries. Look, let me talk about a game that I almost played the other day, A Lucky Escape, I'll tell you.
Hang on, the name of the segment is What Have We Been Playing Lately, not What Have We Been Almost Playing
Lately.
What are you talking about?
I'll tell you the story and then you can work it out, so whether it was A Lucky Escape or not. So on the way to a session of the Hobart Games Society regular weekly event,
mm-hmm.
I had a phone call from a friend of mine saying, hey, look, we've got three people here. We need one more to join in for a game of Dungeon Lords.
Ooh, this is Vlada Hrvatl.
Vlada Hrvatl.
The superstar of Hungarian game
Czech,
design.
Czech.
Yeah, I apologise.
So the Czech game edition game from 2009 where... sort of the D&D reverse where you're the overlord in the dungeon, building your dungeon, putting in traps, putting in monsters.
And the pesky adventurers keep coming
That's
in and
right.
taking your
and
loot.
That's right, and how do you wipe them out? And look, it's a great game, but let me tell you the story. So my friend, who's known for his liking of long games, said, look, we only need one more person. You've played this before, because I have played it once before. Only one person hasn't played it, so it's going to be a very quick rules explanation.
This is John that you're talking about, isn't it?
No names, no court martials.
Oh, no.
So,
I know where this is going, baby.
So it'll be a real quick rules explanation, he says, and then we'll get stuck into it.
Yeah, right.
So I say, I was planning on leaving early because I've got to catch up with someone, but look, I'm probably only here for 2 hours, so let's run with that. So I come in. So anyway... an hour and 15 minutes later, mm-hmm. we've almost finished the rules explanation.
That's John.
And luckily, as luck would have it, my phone goes off and it's my friend that I was going to meet has finished whatever they were doing early and said, could I come early? So I said, absolutely I can, because the game hasn't actually started and someone else can jump in. And I escaped. Look, it's a brilliant game.
How were the rules anyway? I mean, Vlad is renowned for his quite complicated games.
Yeah, well, look, it is complicated, and in fact, it is the only game I've ever played when you have to pass a test to be able to play the game. So there's four training scenarios to explain to you how the heroes come into the dungeon and how you fight them. And there's four actual different little scenarios that you get presented in front of you here. Okay, here you go, you've got this monster and this trap. Work it out.
But do you
you got that right now.
Do you really have to play through those, or is that just Dungeon Lords for dummies? I mean, is it really that complicated?
You probably have to play through at least one of them. Because it is the way that you interact with the heroes, and the way some heroes can stop damage, some heroes can stop trap damage, the way the monsters work, the way the traps work, they are all complicated. I don't think you need four, but you probably need one or two.
Mm. I guess the thing about Vlatovatl's games, and I have Space Alert, and it's one of my favourites, and it's always hilarious to play. It never fails to impress, but it doesn't hit the table often, and it's the same problem. It's complicated to explain because it completely breaks everything that you thought about board gaming.
Yeah.
Everything that you think a board game could possibly be, he'll just turn it completely on its head.
Yeah, and it's the same for me with Galaxy Trucker. You know, I love Galaxy Trucker, but I am not, you know, I've said it so many times on this show, I'm not great at concise game explanations. Mm. And more often than not, I will either play it with someone who already knows who can give a concise game explanation, or I won't bring it to the table.
You know what we need to do?
What?
We need to talk about Vlada a little bit more. We should have we should do a special break on the show next week, just talking about our Vladovatl games, and just try to actually explain
a Vlados
some of the rules, and try to figure out a way of making it a bit more clear.
Yeah,
we could do that.
Okay. What have you been playing?
Well, look, a game I actually did play. Speaking of your long games, Twilight Struggle hit the table over the weekend, which is fantastic. I hadn't played Twilight Struggle in almost a year, and I didn't realise how much I'd been missing it. This is, of course, the number one game on Board Game Geek, the game that replays the Cold War in half the time it took in real life. But look, once you know the rules, and they're not really that difficult, there's a reasonable rule book that comes with it from GMT Games. Once you've broken that down, it actually plays through fairly smoothly. But it is, I'd forgotten just what a tense game this really is. It is only a two-player game, Russia versus the US, and I was playing the US this time round, and I was absolutely creaming the USSR, which is rare. We know my reputation for not necessarily winning an awful lot of games.
The other thing, too, with that game is how it sort of, it's almost skewed in favour of the USSR in the early game, and then the favour sort of slowly skews across to the US in the later game.
Not in this case, and I'll tell you why. I opened with the European scoring card.
Ah.
I opened with that, and this is for anyone who actually understands the game. I opened with that as the first turn headline card. Right, so that's the very first thing that happens. US has a little bit of an upper leg in Europe.
Yeah.
Hey, let's score that right now and give me some points.
Cool.
And I just wasn't looking back from there until my opponent played the Cuban Missile Crisis, which locked me up. I wasn't allowed to launch any coups anywhere in the world. Otherwise, that was going to just incite a nuclear inferno.
And Professor X and Magneto were nowhere to be found at this stage,
unfortunately. It also set the DEFCON track to DEFCON 2.
Oh.
But I did manage to negate the Cuban Missile Crisis by giving up West Germany over to the godless commies.
Oh.
But then I had to go and launch a coup in Chile, which is, and again, I'm talking game talk here, it's a battleground country, which is one of the handful of special countries on the board which swing the politics left and right depending on what happens in there.
Yeah.
And, of course, that sent the entire world into a nuclear inferno.
Ah, dear.
And, you know, normally when that kind of thing happens, it's, you know, a little bit of being absent-minded or just a bit of a slip-up. And it was an honest mistake on my part. But, frankly, I should have been on top of it. Yeah. And I just said to him, listen, don't give me a take-back seat because you're only going to rub it in my face afterwards. Yeah. Like, if I continue to cream you the way I'm going, then you're only going to say, oh, but I should have won anyway because of Chile. Yeah. So, but look, what a fantastic gaming experience it was.
It is a brilliant game.
You know, a stupid way to lose, but it's just made me want to go back and play it again.
Yeah.
Twilight Struggle, which brings me to,
and
you mentioned this on your Kickstarter update last week. The Kickstarter that's happening for the digital version of Twilight Struggle, and it's still online at the moment.
38 hours to go.
At the time of broadcast of this show, not long left at all. It's 670% funded.
Yeah,
this is the iPad version of Twilight Struggle.
No, not just iPad.
Mm.
So it's iPad, PC, Linux, PS4,
And I think there's various price points depending on what system you want it on. It's $15 for the iOS Android version, and then $30 for the PC, Mac, and Linux.
I'm thinking about getting an iPad just so I can play this game.
There's also a physical expansion that comes with it, some alternate history scenarios and some different cards, I believe. Then there's the collector's box.
Oh.
I know. This is a wooden box with metal pieces in it. For all your score trackers and the little pieces that race up the space race tracker.
Yes.
Because the space race is an important part of the Cold War, of course. $175.
Oh,
by the time you factor in the postage into Australia and stuff. Yeah. So it's not cheap. Jeez. But you know what? If you don't own a copy of Twilight Struggle, if you suspect that this might be your cup of tea, $175 is quite a reasonable price for a game that you are going to absolutely love.
It is definitely a game that you need at least one person in your circle of friends to own. Maybe two would be good because it is only two player. And if that guy happens to be away for the weekend when you want to play it, it's a fantastic game. I love it.
All right. Now, we're going to talk to Charles Bishop next, will we? Yeah, from the Australian
OzTag Expo.
Yes. And look, he's, I lined up this interview with him a couple of nights ago, and I thought, we'll just have a quick chat about the expo this weekend in Sydney at Olympic Park. And I thought we'd be in and out and just get a few details of it. But he's actually turned out to be quite a thoughtful and smart dude. And so the conversation wound around a little bit. So we'll get to that next on the Dice Men Cometh. Age Radio 99.3 FM.
King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, a favourite of the Dice Men here with their track Sleepwalker. Edge Radio 99.3 FM, you're listening to Trent and Mark, the Dice Men Cometh. And early in the week, as we mentioned, Trent spoke to Charles Bishop, one of the organisers of the Australian Toy and Game Expo.
No, I promise I did. Anyone in the dying hours of the preparation before the Australian Toy and Game Expo this weekend, how's it all coming together?
It's coming together really well. I guess it's our third year. I look back on the first year and, I was driving up to Sydney on the Thursday before with a car loaded with stuff, talking to an insurance guy on the phone because he didn't want to allow us to have insurance for Nerf blasters unless I could tell him velocity for a Nerf blaster and the likely danger of injury to a person.
That'll have someone's eye out, Charles.
I grew up on a farm. We live in a society that, to a degree, is, quite rightly protective of people and things like that. But I also think there's a degree of loss. There's a little bit of loss has happened with probably the sort of more living indoors, not interacting with people as much kind of thing.
Kids have the right to climb trees and break their arms.
Well, you learn something from it, and you don't learn that falling off a wee. And that sounds a bit flippant, but I think there's some truth in that. Anyway, so back to that. Basically, third year, a bit more relaxed about the fact that we've got everything in place now, and it's really up to people leave buying their tickets till the last 3 or 4 days. Probably a bit more of an attitude of, well, we've done all we can do, and now we just sit back and ride the wave and see what happens.
Now, this is all happening at the Dome in Sydney's Olympic Park. It is not a small venue. How big is this thing? How many people are you expecting through the door for your third year?
All right. So the Dome is 7,500 square metres. It's 90 metres by 90 metres, which makes it roughly around about...
big.
16, 20 basketball courts, maybe 30, I don't know, huge.
Big enough, yep.
Big enough, and it's attached to more space for when we get bigger as well, says he, fingers crossed. Look, it's a big thing and it's a professional thing. And one of the things when we started this, myself and Steve, my business partner, was that we wanted to actually have this not in a basketball court out in the back of nowhere. If we want to bring back the fun of toys and games and hobbies to people, they need to feel that it's valuable. And they need to feel that they're going to a place that is a comfortable place and a quality place with other people who value the same things. So it's a big task to fill the Dome. And to all the exhibitors, we are really thankful for the faith they've shown in us over the years. Numbers of people, well, we got 6,000 in the first year and we got 8,000 in the second year. So, you know, fingers crossed we'll get 10,000 in the third year if you follow the mathematical progression there.
Now, the Australian Toy and Game Expo is modelled on the Essen Spiel Fair in that it's a trade show, but it's also open to the public. Can you just break it down for us, just the very basics for someone who hasn't been to an event like this, what it's actually all about, what goes on there?
It came out of something that was the Australian Games Expo that Phil Davies of Mind Games in Albury had started. And he said, go and have a look at Essen. And we came back and we thought, the model we really want is we want to expose people to the toys, games and hobbies for a particular reason, that some of them are at quite a high price point. So, you know, a good quality board game now is getting up to $120, $140 sometimes.
That's right.
That's a lot of money for something that you don't actually know whether it's any good. And I will say, I'll put the caveat on that, that it's not just any good. It's that I have a group of friends I can play it with. So that was the first thing, was that things had to be out of the wrapper. The second thing was we wanted to show people where you can take it. Some of the N-scale model railway stuff is beautiful. I mean, it is works of art that people put together. The Lego displays are works of art at the top end. So we wanted to show not just you get down and play with it, but you actually can then see where an expert, if you really love this and you're enjoying it, then there's a group you can join that you can actually go and meet with weekly to do this with. And then lastly, we've got some retailers in the hall that if you really enjoyed it, then there's some special offers here and the retailers, you know, hopefully can sell you something that'll start you down that path.
Now, you mentioned Phil Davies from Albury, and I know that this all, of course, started with the Australian Games Expo back in Canberra in the early 2000s. But Phil's kind of handed this over to you guys, and it's just turned into something much, much bigger, yeah?
Yeah, it actually started in Albury.
Right, yes.
The June long weekend in, I think, 2007 or 2006.
And it was actually just a couple of weeks ago that myself and my co-host, Mark, we got along to BorderCon there.
Yeah, look, BorderCon has come out of what was then the Games Expo. So when the Games Expo, Phil moved it to Canberra to be with CanCon, people kept going to Albury. And one of the reasons we sponsor BorderCon is that we really believed in the sort of things that Neil and his group are doing there, cater to a different group of people to us, but we should support him and we should make his life a bit easier if he doesn't have to worry as much about finding money for the room. Then he can get on with organising what's a great weekend, and some of the people that come to our event and are first introduced to Eurogames may well end up there in years to come.
Yeah, well, I know it's appreciated by Neil and by everybody who was there. He had a great turnout this year.
Yeah, apparently too great a turnout.
Yeah, that's exactly the right. I think he's going to be hitting you up for some more money next year.
I mean, that's the whole point of this, is to actually expose people to it. If you look at the hobby stuff and you look at the games, and when people play them, they go, this is really good. These games are fun. And it's like, yeah. But they need to be exposed to them. And there's guys like Chris Whale, who runs Northside Gamers Group with Craig Summerton in Sydney, who run the Learn to Play area at the expo. And they have Alhambra, Carcassonne, Settlers, Love Letter, bunch of others that I just can't remember off the top of my head because I bought two copies of each recently. King all those entry-level Euro games, and those guys come along and they volunteer for 4 hours on the weekend, or in Chris's case, he spends all weekend working there, just to bring members of the general public to have a chance to play the game, to break that first barrier that says, I'm a bit afraid of this, and to say, here, just sit down, I'll take you through the rules and have some fun.
You've got a very impressive list of exhibitors this year. Steve Jackson Games, Mayfair Games, Stronghold Games, Days of Wonder, Rio Grande Games, Indie Boards and Cards. It's a great, great list. Well done on attracting the interest, Charles.
Yep.
Is it difficult to bring these international companies to come all the way to Australia and to attract that interest?
You know, Phil Davies' legacy is part of that. I mean, the relationships he had with Mayfair and with Rio were relationships he handed over to us that we've now built on. So keep building those relationships. I mean, there's a few names not there yet, like AEG, Queen Games, that I think you know, Z-Man's not there this year. In part, it's about listening to them and making it easy for them. So, for example, Days of Wonder, so they give us a quantity of stock that we can sell at the expo to cover their booth and a games demoer. Finding models like that where they don't have to fly to Australia every year, and it is a cost-effective model for them and a logistically easy model, is one of the keys.
That was Charles Bishop. We're going to be back with more from him in a moment. You're listening to The Dice Man Cometh on 99.3 Edge Radio.
The sound of a band calling themselves the Frowning Clouds. I always have to check that because in my head that sounds dirty. You know what? But it's not. Is it just me?
I'm not with you on this
one. Okay, sorry. And before that, the young adults from the Removalists on Edge Radio, 99.3 FM, The Dice Man Cometh. All your board gaming and card game needs in one radio show here on Edge Radio. And we're in the middle of a conversation I had with the Australian Toy and Game Expo's Charles Bishop. He is one brain behind the event, which is happening this weekend in Sydney. Very thoughtful dude. Mark, when he's not organising this, he runs a leadership and resilience consultancy, some kind of life coach thing. And you can tell he's quite a thoughtful dude. And we got talking about his opinion on why we're having this resurgence in board games and why they are so popular.
I'd like to think that there is a community swing towards doing more interactive things together. I'm certainly seeing a really interesting swing in the 20 to 30-year age bracket of people coming to the games for the first time and becoming quite involved in them. You know, you see board game cafes pop up, lots of things like that. Kids that, young adults that didn't grow up in families that played board games and starting them up. So they're a group that I think really are sort of broadening this. And it'll be interesting to see when they have kids how much value they put on continuing to play games with their kids. So I think that there is, I think the other social thing is there is a concern about length of time on a computer, not just necessarily for physiological reasons or things like that, but social development, all those sort of factors. I think we're in an interesting probably 10 or 20 years where we will find out whether this is significant or not, the amount of time kids are spending on electronic devices and getting them away from that and being more socially interactive.
Yeah, look, that's hitting the nail on the head for me. That this is absolutely the appeal of the hobby, that it's social. I mean, I guess some people are arguing that video games can be social with the headsets that you wear and the competitive play and stuff, but ultimately you're just getting your butt kicked by some 12-year-old in Korea that you've never met.
That's right. And I think the other thing, too, is that there's a... Socially, we're an affluent country, and when countries become affluent, what they look for is entertainment. And that's what I think board games offer, is entertainment and an experience together, a shared experience together. The interesting challenge is, however, it also requires responsibility on parents and others' behalf, that it's actually you that's got to initiate this. You choose and you guide your kids in certain directions. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, your kids are never going to rebel and do their own thing. But if you start from a young age, you have a good chance of directing kids in certain ways that, you know, you believe will be good for them. And I think board games and family interaction and those sort of things is a key way of doing that together as a family.
And unfortunately, it just takes that little bit of effort. But, you know, if you demonstrate that there are rewards and that it is fun, you know, that encourages people.
And this is the thing about the learn to play area, is that people have this impression born from games like Monopoly and Squatter that games must take 2 hours.
And end in a fight, yes.
Just abject crushing of someone else. Well, the crushing's always good. But anyway, so if you can demonstrate to people that that is... This isn't something, you know, you can finish dinner at 7:30, you can have a quick game and be done by 8:15. I think that also is another barrier to entry that breaks down.
So you've got the Learn to Play area. You've also got a very impressive games library happening at the expo. Now, what are the logistics of running a games library like that? Because you've got kids, you've got sticky fingers, you've got thieving nerds. How do you police something like that?
You take a Zen Buddhist approach. What? If you're going to get, well, Okay, so that's a little flippant, because what I have done is I now have a set of games that are my games that live in the house. It used to be that everything went in the truck. Look, you've just got to let it go. If someone's going to steal from you, they're going to steal from you. You know, it's like people steal, you know, people forging tickets to get in the expo. You know, it's a family-run thing. They're stealing from us. That's life. That's people. You know, people are people, and you know, there's going to be games come and go out of the library. There's going to be games that get sticky fingers, but then, hey, they're being played with. The great game is at the end of the expo, when you pack up the tables, there are about 30 pieces under the tables. It's to what? I haven't played half the games in the games library. There's 200 and nearly 300 games in there now. I haven't played half of them, so I'm looking at this piece going, nah, got no idea.
Now, in addition to the games library, there's a chess tournament happening, there's the Australian Board Gaming Championships, and there's also the Protospiel, which I really want to talk about, because this is a fantastic part of the weekend, where all the budding designers can rock on in with their prototypes and get some really constructive feedback. Just tell us a bit about how this works, mate.
Australia actually has quite a few games designers. I wasn't aware of this when I started. Guys like Peter Hawes, that have, you know, who's a Brisbane doctor, who has produced Triassic Terror, Francis Drake. Peter's a lovely guy. He's a doctor. His interest is in building games. Doesn't play them, builds them. So getting a game produced is a pretty big deal. Odds are you're not going to make money on it. Be realistic about it.
Yep.
Most games are produced and probably disappear into a limited run shelf. There's very few settlers out there. However, there are a whole bunch of people. The whole point about the expo is see it, play it, own it. Well, the Protospiel is the see it for the games. It's, I've actually played games for a while or not, or I love designing games, so let's give them a forum for people to be able to take the gaming to the very highest level, which is build your own. And so with the support of Richard Vickery from Board Games Australia, who does a great job running it, and Craig Summerton stepping in for him this year because Richard's away, it's another opportunity for Australia to put its games forward out there.
Now, I just want to clarify as well, before we wrap up here, that the insurance company has cleared, it is possible for me to rock in on the weekend and buy some Nerf weaponry. That's not going to be a problem?
It's not the buying that's the problem. It's the racing around inside the 20-metre by 10-metre Nerf arena shooting each other that's the problem.
Oh, my God, a Nerf arena.
Yep, 20 metres by 10 metres, fully enclosed with inflatable obstacles inside it, and beside it there is a Nerf zombie target range and a Nerf rebel target range.
Get yourself there to the Dome at Sydney's Olympic Park this weekend for the Australian Toy and Game Expo, the third iteration of it. Charles, thanks for talking to us. We hope it goes well, and we hope that you're around doing this event for many more years to come. Good on you, mate.
Thanks, Trent.
So Charles Bishop there talking about the Toy and Game Expo, which is, as you heard, on this weekend in Sydney at Olympic Park. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Nerf.
If you arena. Want to shoot Nerf at Trent, maybe
arena.
Send him some money and he might come up and make himself one of those zombie targets. We're going to be back after a brief musical break.
Sarah Biagas on the Dice Men Cometh, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Tassie band doing a Ween cover there and naming themselves after another Ween song. So I'm detecting a theme.
Mm.
And I'm detecting another theme because it's time for half-ass news. And if there's one thing that that Mark has made himself known for on this show, it's his lousy theme music for our segment. So what have you got? I'm almost dreading to... What theme music have you got for half-ass news?
You just have to wait and see.
Some people go to bed. Some people scratch their head.
Oh, what?
What will you do after the news?
It's time for all the news you've been waiting for but were too scared to think about. It's the news you thought you didn't really want to know, but we're going to give it to you anyway. It's Trent and his specialty. It's news. It's half-assed. It's half-assed news.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark. And just to recap, half-assed news, the idea is that we don't have the resources on this show to really do a proper news segment. So this is just me reading the stuff off the internet and whatever's attracted my interest.
And there's quite a bit of it because it's been a few weeks since we talked about game releases and news, and we've had the Origins Game Fair in Ohio earlier this month, and a lot of stuff has come out of that, and all this is, of course, leading up to the Gen Con Game Fair in the States a little bit later in the year. Now, one new game that's on the way that Firefly fans might be interested in, Flans too, if you're that way inclined, the Firefly Dice Game, which is coming from Upper Deck in November.
Oh, yeah, I'm interested.
You just can't kill some franchises, can you? Or
I Nor guess, should you.
Or I guess, you know, there are still companies out there who are looking to leech money off fans. How far away do you think we are from having Firefly, a new series, kickstarted? You've had Veronica Mars.
Yeah, look, it's been talked about a bit. Is there too much water under the bridge, though? That's the thing. I mean, you know, have people moved on? Nathan Fillion back then was, I don't like to say he was a nobody, because he's never really been a nobody. But, you know, now he's on a major TV show. Mm-hmm. He's a sort of major celebrity now. A lot of those other people, Marina Baccarin, she's been on Homeland. You know, like, these people have moved on and they're big stuff now. Whether they're going to go back and do a fan-funded show, I don't know. Maybe they have all new characters. I don't know.
In the meantime, we'll just have to limp along with the games. And there's also another expansion for the Firefly board game coming out in September for players who are a little bit more experienced, called the Blue Sun expansion. So more Firefly stuff coming. And speaking of your hot intellectual properties, the Justice League strategy game. I guess this is a follow-up to something called the Batman strategy game that was released last year to average to okay-ish reviews.
Is it the Batman Gotham City? That's a follow-up to that.
That's the one. This is coming from WizKids very soon, actually, in July. Rio Grande Games. Now, this one, this has got me absolutely beat what Rio Grande are doing. And, in fact, they're demoing this weekend at the Australian Toy and Games Expo in Sydney. The game is... Mark, are you ready for it?
Yes.
Quilt Show.
What?
Quilt Show.
What?
It is a tile-laying game themed around creating quilts for entry into a quilt show.
Oh, now, yeah. You can't say that theme's been overdone.
Either I don't know anything about board gaming, or that's the crappiest idea I've ever heard.
Well, I don't know. You know, a lot of maybe female gamers might say chasing zombies overblown theme.
No, but I would say that's sexist, because you're going to go, oh, yeah, quilting. Yeah, that's going to get the female gamers. No. Is there much of a crossover between the quilting world and the board gaming world?
I don't know. Maybe the listener can hit us up on Facebook and tell us.
I look forward to reading those comments, because I think that is an epic fail.
Yeah, I think you're right. Sounds pretty dull.
Yeah. Love Letter, one of the most successful games of recent years, a game that's come out of Japan and already been rethemed a couple of times, is being rethemed again.
Zombie theme?
By AEG and Cryptozoic? No.
Oh.
Adventure Time. The Adventure Time version of the game.
Yeah.
What are the components of Love Letter, just to refresh our memories?
16 cards.
That's it.
And... just the 13 little wooden cubes.
And you'd be amazed at how great a game it really is with just those few little elements. There's also a version coming which is themed around The Hobbit, and another one with DC Comics, of course. This is all in the build-up to the new Justice League film, whatever that's.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is The Hobbit going to join the Justice League?
I hope so. Might make the Hobbit films a bit more interesting.
Oh, Mr. Frodo.
The Pathfinder Adventure card game. Now, that's something that you purchased.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking the other day, I still haven't got it to the table not solo. I've played it myself to sort of get a feel for it.
Yeah.
And then I got busy and I haven't pulled it out, and I've got the 5 or 6 player expansion, so there's no excuse, really.
You pay a fortune for this enormous box and it's mostly empty air.
Yeah, a lot of air in there. Yeah.
So room for the expansions, which are on the way in August. Skull and Shackles is the next adventure path for it, themed around pirates.
Well, you know that one. It's actually a whole new base game. So you've had the original one, which is Rise of the Rune Lords.
Yeah.
And the 5 and 6 player expansion. And then there are 6 packs that go along with that story arc.
This what's it called again?
Skull and Shackles.
Yeah, so this is basically the second story arc.
This is another box full of
with
empty air.
Another box of air that'll then have its own six expansions and its own five and six player expansion because they're different characters again from the previous story arc.
Listen, you've got to get me into this because I am interested in Pathfinder. I've played the RPG a couple of times.
Yeah.
And of course, this is what D&D 5th edition is up against later this year because Pathfinder's really taken the crown of the go-to sword and sorcery role-playing game. So anyway, interesting.
I'll bring it along.
Asmodee are about to re-release the Rampage board game, which we played the other night and weren't that impressed with.
No.
They're retitling it Terror in Meeple City. Apparently there are trademark problems because the name Rampage resembles some other intellectual property. Could that be a video game from the 80s that attracted everybody to it? Yes. I don't know. I would suspect that they probably just decided to release it under that title without checking with anybody.
I was going to say, it's a bit of a double-edged sword because it did attract a lot of attention, just the name, but now obviously they've fallen into problems. Did we sort of give a brief review of that game where we said it was crap?
I'll give a brief review
maybe,
right now.
Yeah.
Asmodee are also re-releasing Cash and Guns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, second edition of this, the bluffing and negotiation game which features big piles of cash and foam guns. Matt Leacock, the designer of Forbidden Island and Pandemic, has been tapped to design a game themed around the Thunderbirds. For the 50th anniversary of the Thunderbirds TV show, that'll be coming out in the third quarter of next year, maybe. The Thunderbirds, of course, the Tracy family working to stop disasters. They're each going to have special, you know, Thunderbirds 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, etc. And I guess they'll have special powers. And it sounds a lot like Pandemic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Matt Leacock's the guy doing that. Pandemic Part 2, Thunderbirds.
So...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much more you've got, but Peace. Have you heard about Pandemic Legacy?
Oh?
You haven't heard?
No.
This news really is half-assed, isn't it? Pandemic Legacy is what's coming next with Rob... Matt Leacock combining with Rob Davio, who did Risk Legacy. All I've heard is the title and seen some pictures.
So this is a board, this the games is... of Pandemic where every game changes the one that, you, that you're playing and you're permanently marking the board.
Sounds interesting.
It does. My news is half-assed. Okay, very quickly, because we're running out of time, Days of Wonder have announced a brand new game. They don't make a lot of games every year, so you always pay attention when they put out a new title. This one is called Five Tribes. It's by Bruno Cathala. Mm. It is described as a gamer's game. The mechanic is worker displacement.
Right.
You randomly lay out tiles that make up an Arabian city and the workers are already in place. And then when you move them over the villages and oases and the markets, that triggers the various actions. There's five tribes of meeples, assassins and merchants and builders and elders and viziers, I think you pronounce it that way. And it's a Tales of Arabian Nights type of theme. Looks gorgeous. Mm. The pieces look fantastic. Steve Jackson Games are preparing a brand new edition of Car Wars, a game from the 80s. It was re-released in the 90s, playing with actual Matchbox cards. I think this is one of those things, one of those games or childhood memories that's perhaps best left to memory. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably given a little bit more affection than is warranted. They're preparing a brand new edition, but they're preparing in the meantime by re-releasing the 1990 version.
Oh.
That doesn't make any sense to me either. And last but not least, Dead of Winter, the Crossroads game.
Oh, yeah, bring it on, baby.
Yep, coming from Plaid Hat Games. It is finally shipping. I have this on order. This is the meta-cooperative psychological horror game with characters who have their own goals, a big morale tracker for the whole group, a possible traitor mechanic. This is the first in the series of Crossroads games from Plaid Hat Games, and my copy is on the way.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait to play this.
Cannot wait.
The whole the story deck mechanic, how the story advances... And how, you know, if you're not progressing the story, then you get kicked out and then you might actually die and have to come in with another character.
You can vote to exile players. And the Crossroads mechanic is if I'm having my go and during my go a certain condition is met, because the player next in line has a Crossroads card, they're monitoring that. If I meet the condition on that card, game changes.
Mm.
Entire game tilts. Really looking forward to it. And that's half-assed news, which brings us to the end of the show.
It does. That was not so half-assed, but... Well done.
We've run out of time again.
We have run out of time again. So, look, we've got half of the next show planned because obviously we've got our Game of Thrones games to talk about. Do you want to just drop one?
Look, I did have one really great suggestion from Garth, because we're looking for ideas for Game of Thrones games that don't exist, something that's going to tie us over to the next series. How about something called the Khaleesi virus? That involves rabbits. Somehow. I don't know. Rabbits versus dire wolves.
Oh,
let's think about that a little bit more. Yeah. If you think about a good Game of Thrones idea, then let us know. Hit us up on the Facebook. And look, speaking of Facebook...
Yeah, Facebook's
gone
berserk.
It's been an amazing week for us. We passed 200 likes on our Facebook Woo! Page for the Dice Men Cometh. Now, for some people, that might not sound like a lot, but to us, look, that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, we had been growing by... 2 likes a week, maybe.
But hey,
and all of a sudden, it's just gone berserk. We went up like 15 in a week and a half.
Well, it had a little bit to do with the marketing offensive that I launched on Board Game Geek. And again, I just want to give a shout out to some of the people who've responded to the messages I've been posting on the Geek forums. Michael Dart in Melbourne, Dave Binney in Canberra, Jason Kotzer Young in Queensland, and also, but in particular, to Richard Channel in Townsville, who's downloaded every single episode of this show. Every single episode, just so he can mow his lawn. Mark, it's good to know that some of our listeners are on grass.
Absolutely. Well, look, we've run out of time. We are the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio, Mark and Trent, 99.3 FM. Check us out on Facebook. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on the Edge Radio website. Check us out same time next week. In the meantime, we'll leave you with another great Tassie track by the Philistines, or the Philistines. Outside, that's where we're going now. See you next week.
Bye. This has been an edit of the Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.